The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This week on Inside Hollywood, we're looking at cases where lightning only struck once. In other words, one-hit wonders, sort of. I'm joined by Lisa Cannon, broadcaster and TV producer. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Well, you know, this is a controversial one because people say, well, you know, they burst onto the scene. I mean, maybe they were iconic, but then culturally, you know, they were destined for greatness and then boom, nothing. Not even a return. But some of the ones I have put in today have returned. But
what do I mean by sort of?
Sort of. Okay, so, I mean, ultimately, you know, it's kind of a spectacular unravelling. You become a director, you want your big, big hit to be a big hit, and then it may do well, and then, of course, your second one never happens. It's like the second album that never follows up. So I suppose I've got some good examples, some extraordinary ones, where the promise of genius gave way to artistic exile. Or maybe just bad luck, Pat. Who knows?
Okay, who do you want to hear first?
Well, I think, you know, Rob Reiner, if you haven't seen This Is Spinal Tap, cast your mind back to 1984. This rockumentary is spectacular. And it's one of the best, I think, in the business. Have a listen and then I'll speak about it.
Now, during the Flower People period, who was your drummer?
Stumpy's replacement, Peter James Bond.
He also died in mysterious circumstances.
We were playing a festival. Jazz blues festival. Where was that?
Well, blues jazz, really.
Blues jazz festival.
It was in the Isle of Lucy. And
it was tragic, really.
He exploded on stage.
Just like that?
He just went up.
He just was like a flash of green light. And that was it. Nothing was left.
It
was
his face.
Well, there was.
It's
actually
true. This truly did happen.
There was a little green globule on his drum seat.
It's like a stain, really.
It was more of a stain than a globule, actually.
Dozens of people spontaneously combust each year. It's just not really widely reported.
Right. Yeah.
It's incredibly funny, but some people actually believed it.
Absolutely. And it's deadpan, you see. That's the thing. When you're listening to that clip, you're like, that couldn't be right. It's a fictional tale, of course, about a rock band with amps that go up to number 11. Completely improvised, totally iconic. And Rob Reiner, now before people kind of get on my back about this, yes, he did direct When Harry Met Sally and Stand By Me and A Few Good Men. But Spinal Tap was lightning in a bottle because it was before mockumentaries were a thing, really. And it launched the genre, but then it kind of blurred the lines between fiction and rock reality. So convincingly that people actually, as you rightly said, thought the band were real. I did when I first saw it, by the way. My dad never said anything. And then I was like, are these guys for real? You know, yeah. I couldn't believe it. But actually, it's the style of filmmaking that's kind of modern. And it's a little bit like The Office, you know, or Parks and Recreation.
But
so
this was the original and best of the genre. Now, you've got directors who have a massive hit. I mean, The Deer Hunter is an example. And then what?
Well, you know, The Deer Hunter is such a phenomenal film anyway, but Michael Cimino, or Cimino, as you say, is the Oscar-sweeping, this is the Vietnam War epic movie. And I don't know if everybody has seen it, but that haunting Russian roulette scene, it's got such emotional depth. It's really brilliant. It won 5 Oscars, including Best Director and Best Picture. It's kind of raw and fearless. But ultimately, the fallout was that he was obsessive. Michael Cimino was absolutely obsessive. His exacting was so bad that he shot 50 takes of a door closing. Ran into so many difficulties working with De Niro and Christopher Walken. And ultimately, Michael Cimino is an amazing director, but sometimes the genius overtakes, and Heaven's Gate is a perfect example.
And that was the problem. That was his follow-up, and it bankrupted the studio.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And there's a few debut dramas more towering than, you know, the Deer Hunter, because this kind of sprawling, raw portrait just, it made him more obsessed than he already was. And the ballooning budgets, and as you rightly said, that kind of obsessive control, kind of flopped, I suppose, with audiences in ways, and a bankrupt United Artists. It was a tragedy, I think, because he was a brilliant director, but in Uptown, kind of obsessed with box office, the masterpiece couldn't be shielded and couldn't shield him forever. Mm. He's done very little since, so that is Michael Cimino in essence.
Now, there's a movie called American History X from 1998, which I haven't seen. Tell me about it, and then we'll hear someone talking about it.
Yep, so if you haven't seen it, it's a blisteringly emotional film all about racism and redemption. It's hard watch if you've never seen it, and starring the great Edward Norton. And critics loved it, audience loved it, but the director absolutely hated it. He had a massive fallout with Edward Norton, and he was blacklisted for years. And he tried to return with movies like Detachment, but he couldn't actually get back up on the horse properly, and did some low-budget movies and has kind of just slithered into oblivion, really.
So Tony Kaye, he actually wanted his own name replaced. placed on the directorial credits as Humpty Dumpty.
Yes, there were so many fallouts. It was like the estrangement of all estrangements within the framework of the movie. They all hated each other. Nobody could get along. It was Edward Norton hated all the edits. He stomped out. He's a very difficult actor anyway. I've interviewed him, but I did try and ask him about it and he wouldn't, he clammed up, he wouldn't talk about it. But let's hear what he has to say in a different interview talking about this movie.
Where do you go inside yourself to bring out that evil?
Well, to be honest, when you're doing it, I mean, you can't really use words like evil because it's too external. If you're using words like that, then you're judging the character, and you've got to, as an actor, you got to get inside of it and play it from the inside. And what he is to himself is not evil. He's angry, and he feels justifiably angry. And I think that. A lot of people want to think, or sometimes will say that to play these kinds of roles, an actor has to find it in themselves. And I've never completely bought that. I don't think that you have to relate personally to get there. Part of being an actor is about observing these qualities or dynamics in other people and then turning around and representing them. It's somewhat of an imaginative act, you know what I mean? And for me, in this case, it's very challenging because it's an incredibly, it's a heightened energy level to sustain, but I don't know exactly where you find it, but it's about entering into the sort of the zone of a character and staying there for a little while.
He's an interesting actor. I mean, he plays bad guys so often, and yet I watched him as Pete Seeger in the Bob Dylan thing recently.
Yes, yeah.
He's quite an affable chap.
He is, and obviously I was a little bit nervous going into the interview. I can't remember the movie I was interviewing him for, but he was... he's quite measured when he comes up with his answers, and that was quite a long answer about American History X. But the director, Tony Kaye, fought with him so badly that they actually brought a rabbi into the meetings, a priest, a monk. The legal meetings about this movie were sore point for Tony Kaye. And Edward Norton didn't want to talk about it for years later. As I said, I tried to bring it up in the interview. No. I was shut down immediately because the director didn't forgive the cut that actually eventually went out. Now, American History X is a wonderful movie. I mean, it's a hard watch, as I mentioned, 1998. If you haven't seen it, go have a look. But, you know, when we talk about these directors, it's also the actors they're working with. Sometimes it doesn't gel, you know. Gary Ross is another great director who directed Pleasantville in 1998. He didn't get on with the actors there either. So sometimes, you know, things happen, right?
Things happen. Now, I want to play a clip of a movie called... The Night of the Hunter, directed by Charles Laughton.
It's Cooper!
What?
The man! The man!
Good morning, ladies.
I do.
Why, you're Miss Cooper, I take it.
It's about that John and that Pearl.
Oh, them poor little lambs. To think I never hope to see them again in this world. Oh, dear madam, if you was to know what a crown of thorns I've borne in my search for them stray chicks.
Ruby, go fetch them kids.
Oh, madam, I see you're looking at my hands.
How are you figuring to raise them two without a woman?
Oh, the Lord will provide. The Lord is merciful. Oh, what a day this is. And there's little John.
What's wrong, John?
Come to me, boy.
What's wrong, John?
Didn't you hear me, boy?
John, when your dad says come, you should mind him.
He ain't my dad.
No, and he ain't no preacher neither. Just march yourself yonder to your horse, mister. March, mister. I'm not fooling.
All right. But you haven't heard the last of Harry Powell yet.
The great Robert Mitchum there in The Night of the Hunter. Charles Laughton as director.
Yeah, I mean, it was Laughton's only directorial effort and it bombed at the box office at the time, but he never directed again. I mean, that to me is very strange because this legacy of the film, it influenced directors like David Lynch, the late David Lynch, and of course the Coen brothers. And I thought it was a beautifully crafted movie. You know, the German expressionism and the shadow play was very, very stunning. And it's a kind of eerie Southern Gothic masterpiece. And Robert Mitchum, I mean, I'm sure you love him as an actor. I mean, it was fantastic.
Now, tell me about a couple of other one-hit wonders directors who were promising and then Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, well, let's talk even a little bit about Macbeth. You know, I can't say it three times, of course, Pat. But the 2015 version, it's visually very operatic. It stars, you know, Marion Cotillard and our wonderful Michael Fassbender. But it had all that brooding intensity of what Macbeth should be. But ultimately, it bombed. Despite all the big stars and the director, Justin Kurzel, went on to, you know, follow it up with Assassin's Creed. Macbeth is a very challenging piece to direct.
That's twice you've said it.
Oh, gosh. I'm not going to say it again. It is one of the most boldest, the brutal takes on the Bard ever to be put to screen. But I think the battle scenes were kind of formed in this foggy Scottish mist, but none of it worked. And I think the director, when you lose confidence and your actors lose confidence in you, it's very hard to come back up again. I mean, you know, to have the prolific essence of somebody like Spielberg and Scorsese or even Francis Ford Coppola, some of these younger directors, you know, when their confidence goes, it goes completely. I mean, even the Blair Witch Project, Daniel Merrick and Eduardo Sanchez have done very little since that great film.
Finally, you mentioned in passing Pleasantville from 1998.
That's right.
And a director called Gary Ross.
Gary Ross, yeah. I mean, I thought it was a great movie. I don't know if you've seen it as well, but he went on to direct technically Seabiscuit and Hunger Games, but it remains his most original film by far. It's kind of a gem of the late 90s cinema. It's kind of smart and stylish and beautifully symbolic, but it was one of the first films to use digital colour correction in this way. So here's some of our directors. I mean, just because you make one movie, you know, you sometimes can't always follow it up with greatness.
Absolutely. Lisa Cannon, TV producer and presenter, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.